The Capital Investment Committee is called to order. Members, we do not have quorum, and so we'll move right along to bill presentation. And so today we have a pretty long agenda, 5 minutes each. So welcome, Chair Lizagar, House File 2635. Please proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing House File 2635, a bonding request for my constituents in the city of Chisholm. Obviously, it's no secret that I am a supporter of our film and TV industry here in the state of Minnesota. And it's also no secret that we have been growing the film and TV industry on the Iron Range. The upgrades in House File 2635 to the city-owned building will serve as a critical asset in supporting film and video production in northern Minnesota. By transforming the building into a high-quality production facility that meets the specific requirements of a film industry, the upgraded space will attract film productions to the region, create jobs and educational opportunities, and foster economic growth in Northeast Minnesota, where it is so critically needed. And with me, I have the city administrator for Chisholm.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. Stephanie Sprava, the city administrator for the city of Chisholm. It is a pleasure to be here today to represent the city of Chisholm. Film production is a growing industry on the Iron Range, bringing an economic swirl when producers choose to use our beautiful landscape as a backdrop for their films. The city has had the privilege of utilizing one of its longest-standing facilities for film production. The City Hall in Chisholm is unique to its area. The building has a large space, which was originally constructed around 1923 for a curling club ice arena. The space was then turned into a t-shirt factory, linen factory.
Can you talk to the mic, please?
Oh, excuse me. The space was then turned into a t-shirt linen factory during World War II to meet the demands of the war. It would function in this capacity until the early 2000s. When the space was vacated, it allowed the realization of film production to take place in Chisholm. This was an opportunity to have the largest film stage in Minnesota. The city partnered with Lost 40 Studios last year to build this industry in a city of less than 5,000 people. Within the last year, Lost 40 Studios has facilitated over $1.1 million of impact in the community, including $170,000 in hotels and almost $70,000 in catering and food services. The University of Minnesota recently conducted a study of the economic impact of film in Minnesota, and the return on investment for every dollar spent is $6.90 invested back into the local economy. Lost 40 Studios has committed to growing the local workforce by conducting 5 workshops over the last year to train local talent interested in film production. They have a goal for the next year to conduct these types of workshops on a monthly basis. With the investment of film incentives from the state of Minnesota, St. Louis County, and Iron Range Resources, the city of Chisholm is becoming known for film production in a very short time frame. There is only one problem. The space needs to be updated and retrofitted to the needs to accommodate this industry. This is crucial for success of the region. These improvements include general building repairs, such as roof repairs, window replacement, upgrades to HVAC, carpet paint, and lighting. This also includes build-out of offices, main stage, screening rooms, educational rooms, and the list goes on. This is not only an investment in Chisholm, this is an investment for the whole region. Chisholm is a small community. I see the value the film industry brings to diversify our economy. We cannot bring this industry to the next level alone. Thank you for your time and consideration.
See no questions. Closing comments. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, Representative Lisgard, for bringing this. You know, being a new member, I don't know what you've done in the past as far as, you know, the film industry, but I just want to say, you know, hopefully you're looking at other policies that do help with the Iron Range and the industry that they need up there, because this was something I was actually talking to another member about, Representative Igo, and he said, oh, Lisgard's got a bill for that. So I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to think outside the box, so I do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Lisgard, thank you for bringing this forward. For a long time, I've been involved in committees that dealt with this, for whether legacy or capital investment to a lesser extent, and it's always been very questionable to me why we have to, why movies made that should be made in Minnesota have to be filmed someplace else. They go to Canada to film hockey scenes. Well, we could do that here, but the incentives are so much better in other places. You know, go to Georgia to film or whatever. So I've been supportive of this in the past. I want to say that, you know, there have been references. Maybe some people are aware that, you know, I write books, and this past summer we maybe filmed a feature film based on one of my books, and we were able to do this just north of Litchfield. But I want to say, for the record, no state money goes into any of my movies. I have a little conflict of interest there that I wouldn't want to deal with. So I wanted to say that on the record. Like to see movies made in Minnesota, using Minnesota incentives, but won't be in my movies. Mr. Chair, if I just have a question.
Representative Erdahl.
There's a Representative Scraba that sits over here. Do you have any, would you admit to any connection?
Ms. Scraba.
There is no relation.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Lissigard, when I look at the language, West Lake Street, I thought that you were going to build a film facility in Minneapolis, but closing comments.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be before you, and I would appreciate any support that I could get. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Next on the agenda, House File 437, Representative Elkins. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have with me today Mayor Tim Bussey and City Manager Jamie Verbrugge, who will be presenting the bill.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, for giving us the time to discuss our bonding request today for the renovation of Bloomington Ice Garden in Bloomington, more commonly known as BIG. My name is Tim Bussey. I have the honor and privilege of serving as mayor of the city of Bloomington, and I do appreciate this opportunity to speak to you all today. Annually, Bloomington Ice Garden, or BIG, rents more than 9,000 ice hours and hosts more than 24 tournaments and figure skating events with skaters from Minnesota and all over the United States and Canada. In addition, the home arena is the home arena for Bloomington Jefferson and Bloomington Kennedy High School and the Figure Skating Club of Bloomington and the Bloomington Amateur Hockey Association, making it one of the busiest arenas in the state of Minnesota. I think it's fair to say that any hockey player who has laced up skates has at one time played in Bloomington Ice Garden, including the 1980 Olympic gold medal team. BIG is truly a regional and statewide amenity. 15% of the players in our youth hockey hub tournament come from outside the metropolitan area. 89% of the teams in the Bloomington Amateur Hockey Association's five annual tournaments come from outside of Bloomington. And upwards of 70% of our ice rental during the summer is from groups outside of Bloomington. The city is requesting $15 million in bonding funds to design, reconstruct, and upgrade the facility. And the total project cost for a renovated building is an estimated $35 million. Thank you, Chair Lee, for the opportunity to present this worthy project. If you'll permit me, City Manager Jamie Verbrugge is here to talk in more detail about the project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jamie Verbrugge. I'm the City Manager for the City of Bloomington. As the Mayor just noted, Bloomington Ice Garden facility is passing its useful life. The facility assessment that we had done in 2020 found problems with the building's critical infrastructure, including the refrigerant system, which is powered by ozone-depleting R22 refrigerant, which is also being phased out nationally. The existing systems can still be serviced by recovered or recycled or reclaimed refrigerant, but as of 2019, production and importing of that refrigerant is banned, which ensures that the cost on the secondary market is only going to continue to increase as the supply becomes depleted, and that cost eventually becomes prohibitive for any arena operator that still uses this refrigerant. The ice system serving rinks 2 and 3 has reached the end of its expected life, and all three sheets use the R22 refrigerant. This project provides an opportunity to modernize one of Minnesota's most historic ice arenas. Improvements under consideration include updates to many of the major mechanical systems and the roof, which needs to be replaced, improvements to ADA accessibility, including adding elevators to allow guest access to viewing areas on all three rinks, and renovating older locker rooms and restrooms between rinks 2 and 3. Interestingly, part of the project also is a downsizing of rink 3, which is an Olympic-sized ice sheet. This was all the trend back in 1993 when that rink was installed. but all around the state you're seeing places that are decommissioning Olympic-sized rinks and going back to a standard-size sheet of ice. And for youth users, the Olympic sheet is simply just too big. So we're looking at full-scale renovation of the facility that would benefit our community users, our figure skaters, our hockey players, and frankly benefits the whole region. Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to answer any questions along with the mayor.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wondering, see, the renovation is $35 million, is that correct?
Yeah. Mr. Verdu, please go ahead.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Representative Erdahl, yes, that's correct. And we're asking for less than 50% support from the state for that.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. And I'll just add quickly, all the Erdahl boys played there. what would the cost of a new arena be?
Senator Berube.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, we haven't actually penciled that out. We believe that the facility is an asset worth preserving, and this is an example of something that can be renovated at a reasonable price, if $35 million can be called a reasonable price. But I think new construction is going to far exceed that. And frankly, it's in such a really good position, centrally located within the community, easy access to the rest of the regional transportation system, that scrape and rebuild just probably doesn't make any sense.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, it's too bad that you're too far from Plymouth. Otherwise, I invite you to just use the PIC, which is the Plymouth Ice Center, as opposed to the big. So my question, I've been through this a lot with renovating our ice center and everything, keeping it up to getting rid of some of the refrigerants. So one question is kind of an aside. Does this include any equipment? Like, for example, electric Zambonis, do you use those?
Mr. Verbrugge.
Mr. Chair, committee members, representative, yes. Much of the mechanical is original, and we just have we have difficulty getting parts for those systems at this point. So there's a little bit of baling wire and chewing gum that's keeping some of this from flying apart right now. Yeah. You know, it's a full-scale renovation of all the systems.
So it looks like you have a
Representative Carroll, last follow-up.
Thank you. Looks like you have a flat roof. Does that cause any problems?
It has, Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Representative, it has, and it is in need of immediate replacement. Now, I don't know if we are looking at a different design on the roof. I can't recall that specifically, but the flat roof has been a problem since it's 50 years old.
Thank you, Mr. Berube. Representative Elkins, closing comments.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your consideration. This is a regionally, statewide, significant, historic, desperately in need of being given a new lease on life.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Next on the agenda, House File 919, Representative Kreshaw. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 919 is a Water Shamanar Lake Improvement District, and I'm going to yield most of my time over to my testifier so he can tell from firsthand experience his story.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Rick Rosar. I'm the chairperson for the Lake Shamanar Lake Improvement District. I'm here on behalf of the Lake Shamanar Lake Improvement District and House File 919. We are requesting a $3 million match for our $6 million project. I want to thank you all for allowing us to present our project, our authors, co-authors, some of them I see here. Thank you for that. As a LID, we are under the jurisdiction of Morrison County and the DNR. We are a local government unit and have many of the same powers as the city, particularly being able to levy assessments for improvements, although like a referendum, our residents vote on whether to approve the project or not, and then the assessment is certified by the county. The Lake Shamanar water has been steadily rising due to not having an outlet and the increasingly wet hydrological cycle in the region. We have been above the ordinary high water level since 2013, and it's been steadily rising. There's nothing normal about the ordinary high water level. This is the highest level the DNR determines by looking at the landscape and vegetation, which may have been present for hundreds, hundreds of years and determines what is the highest level the lake has been or would ever be, basically since the beginning of time. Most lakes never reach this level and are typically several feet below this mark. That's what's normal. These higher than normal water levels also destroys trees, native vegetation, and precious wildlife habitat. Lake recreation has been negatively impacted due to a 300-foot no-wake zone that has been implemented due to the high water. Our project is quite a simple construction project. It consists of a pump house adjacent to the lake where the water gravity flows from the lake into a sump basket, similar to what you would have in your basement. From there, the water will flow through an underground pipe along Highway 10 and then under the highway through a series of existing ditches in Todd County and into the Long Prairie River, which is where the watershed naturally flows to. You can see some pictures there of our lake, and I can describe some things about that. Our flooding is different from what you normally see in the news. Our water is continually rising. It may fluctuate slightly, but never returns to a safe level like other types of flooding. Many of the homes around the lake that haven't been demolished by the rising water and ice heaves have basements full of water. Some homeowners have had to fill their basements with sand or concrete to minimize the mold buildup. Many other homes have been completely lost their yards and have water on the first floor of their homes and are unable to run their AC or furnaces. The U.S. Postal Service won't deliver to some homes. Roads are closed and impassable. Propane companies can't get to the homes to fill their tanks for cooking and heating. Septic pumping companies can't reach the homes, or septic tanks are surrounded by water, so many residents have rented porta potties. Several more homes had to shut off their electricity due to the flooding. Some residents have not been able to access their homes for many years. We just received an email just this past week from Carsey Williams thanking us for our efforts and explaining that they have been not able to access their home for over 6 years. If there is a medical emergency or house fire, the first responders may not be able to save the home or the individual in time due to limited access to the home or electricity in the home. In closing, I want to let you know that our project is shovel-ready. We have the matching funds and permits from the DNR, MnDOT, and Morrison County were approved, and our neighbors in Todd County have given us permission to use their existing ditches as well. Many people come to the lake to visit the church camps, resorts, or to enjoy the excellent fishing or recreation our lake provides. Our members have voted and have approved funding for the project, and the county has certified it. In short, we have the funding that will match any state funding we should receive. In addition, we have virtually all the property owner easements and agreements and are over three quarters of the way complete in the final design. With your help, we can begin construction this summer or fall, which is what our schedule is on. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have, and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Kreisha, I'm sympathetic to the folks in Chaminade. Hope that something can be done. I'm just asking, in the bill that is in limbo right now, there is a sizable amount of money in for flood hazard mitigation. And I'm wondering where you are on the list. I was given the impression that if that bill were to pass, you likely would be covered.
Mr. Rosar or Representative Kreisha.
And thank you for that. And appreciate the question, Representative Erdahl. So we believe we're high up on the list. In fact, the information I have is the bill that would have passed that I voted for, I think would have covered them, and which is why I didn't offer any amendments to do a carve-out, because I thought that was the right thing to do. And so that's where I believe we are. And as long as we stay there, I think we're in good shape, as long as there's no other earmarks or carve-outs that would move us further down.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll just have to see what happens with the bill.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kreisha, I'd like to follow up with you. I've had some constituents who have property along the lake. I think they had some concerns about Lake Improvement District and, you know, all the challenges often when there are residents who can vote and people who own property but are not residents. Mm-hmm. And just the challenges involved. So, you know, this has been ongoing for a very long time. I think we've talked about it before, but I just want to circle back on this one, because I think I've had people contact me about stuff.
Representative Creech, I'll respond in closing.
Thank you, and thank you for that, Chair Lee and Representative Hansen. So we've worked through a lot of that. I've heard those same things, and I'll be very honest with you. I think Rick and the folks have had plenty of meetings. They've talked through this. The opposition is small, and a lot of it's unfounded because they have agreements, and they know where the water is going to go. They're not just dumping it into land. So I understand that, and with any project, there's always people that raise the uncertainty and all that. But I can tell you that through the hundreds, literally hundreds of conversations and meetings that we've had, I believe all of those have been addressed.
Thank you, Representative Creech. Next on the agenda, House File 1919, Representative Keyard. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Hello, members. House File 1919 is a request for a wellness center in White Earth Nation. We do have a testifier online today because of distance and health. That is the best way that he can join us. What this bill does and what the efforts are is to create a wellness building that provides space for health, wellness, wraparound services, culturally specific programs, events, and community partnerships for both tribal and non-tribal members in the public. A portion of this that I find really interesting is the behavior health portion. As we know, in Greater Minnesota, there are a lot of gaps that we have, and when we don't have those services in our communities, particularly our tribal communities, they end up funneling into Minneapolis-St. Paul. So the area around behavior health, they'll have meeting spaces, treatment rooms for youth, staff that will work with youth providing prevention services in areas of substance abuse, mental health, suicide, disease and infection diseases, intervention and outreach. Along with many other things, but also including the Boys and Girls Club would be housed here to be able to have access to really amazing things for our next generation, and having a gym, but also having an elderly nutrition center that we really believe culturally intertwining our generations is key. And having a one-stop shop in one location for our community to go to is the healthiest investment if we want to move to our testifier online.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Councilmember Somers, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eugene Somers. I am a tribal council member of the White Earth Nation. I'm here to testify on House File 1919. The White Earth Nation has 18,000 citizens. There are over 9,700 state citizens who reside within the boundaries of our reservation. We work cooperatively with our state and local governments to ensure the highest quality of life for everyone. Our communities have been negatively impacted by the drug epidemic, health disparities, and suicide. The White Earth Nation has made efforts to combat these disparities with the development of behavior health, mental health, and public health programming. We need a centralized location to administer these services and make them more accessible to the public. As you may know, we're a very rural area. Today, we're asking for your support so we can provide these essential services to our communities. The $30 million funding request will support a community wellness center that will provide health, wellness, wraparound services, culturally specific programming, and community partnerships for both tribal and non-tribal members of the public. The location will be in the city of Manoman, which is a centralized location, and it's near four other communities that will benefit tremendously from this project. Within these communities, there are three schools, one college, and five active community/city councils. This space will give community members access to a gymnasium, fitness center, walking track, lockers, and showers, as well as provide classrooms, computer labs, high ceiling space for robotics. There's also programming to address a variety of topics for the youth of various ages and genders, anti-bullying programs, nutrition, trauma-informed care, and cultural specific teachings. The core programs that will be housed at the center will be our mental health services and our behavior health services. So these programs will create the sustainability we need to maintain the wellness center while offering individual case plans and quality case management services. And the Boys and Girls Club and the Elder Nutrition Program will also be housed here. This will ensure that our most vulnerable individuals will have access to a meal and a safe space to engage their peers.
Thank you, council members. So, you know, questions, closing comments, Representative Keeler.
It's an investment in Greater Minnesota. It's an investment in community. We know how to take care of ourselves holistically, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Representative Brand. First up, House File 97. Welcome, Representative Brand. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 97 is before you. This is a request for $10 million in the in bonding money for the Caswell Sports Complex. And I will tell you that this would be a regional opportunity for us. I believe you all have a handout. Mine is laminated and in color, but thanks to the city of North Mankato. But this is a $10 million request for phase two. We had a $2 million appropriation in 2020 for Caswell Park. And as you can see on the back page here, it kind of talks about the phase one, the funding, how everything was broken down into. Now, the particulars of this, 74% of the people who voted on the project voted in favor of Caswell Park being included in the city's parks suite. And, you know, the city is ready and prepared to spend $13 million. They're asking for $10 million from the state of Minnesota to participate in this, to get a regional location for people not just to play baseball or softball, but for a lot of other things, including basketball, indoor basketball, indoor volleyball, different sports across the whole spectrum. They're going to talk in a minute about all of the partners in our community, including our colleges, that are super excited for this opportunity. But before I do that, I just want to point out to you that this is, I believe, a regional opportunity for our state, but also for the people who live. It's an amenity. It's an opportunity. Once this is developed, I do believe that there will be additional economic development in the northern part of North Mankato. And so this is kind of like a crown jewel. Without further ado, I would like to transfer my time over to my testifier.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you, Representative Brand. My name is Scott Carlson. I'm newly elected mayor of North Mankato. I'm going to skip a few things because Mr. Brand covered it. This project, spearheaded by former Mayor Mark Dean and current and former council members, was included in the 2022 omnibus bonding bill that did not obtain final passage. The state initially awarded $2 million, as Mr. Brand referred to, for Caswell Regional Sports and Softball and Soccer Complex. For updates and improvements, initial design work for the indoor rec facility project in 2021. The city of North Mankato added $3.2 million along with $700,000 from our local user groups. For those updates and improvements to Caswell Regional Softball and Soccer Outdoor Sports Complex, which are being completed this spring. In 2016, a 0.5% local option sales tax extension for $15 million was approved, receiving 73%, as Mr. Brand said, of the vote towards enhancing parks and rec, library expansion, lake improvements, and riverfront redevelopment. This project will contribute to the regional quality of life and economic well-being in North Mankato and the surrounding area. MSU Mankato and Bethany Lutheran College will use this indoor rec facility as their home tennis courts for their collegiate programs, Minnesota Attack AEU Volleyball, Minnesota Rise AEU Basketball, Mankato Tennis Association, and Mankato Area Public Schools, which I work for, are just a few local user groups committed to using this facility. The word regional can be used loosely by cities, but our impact spans across south central Minnesota, north to St. Cloud, east to Rochester, south to Ames, Iowa, west to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Our economic draw for this facility is southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, with in about 65 plus mile radius of North Mankato. This facility will provide a home for indoor sports that does not exist today, and provide a venue open to all citizens of our community and the surrounding area. The construction of the field house also responds to the regional planning efforts. Caswell Sports, or Caswell Softball, has long been recognized as a statewide asset, having hosted the Minnesota State High School Softball Championship for 30 years, which my daughter won the championship last year in her hometown, as well as regional and international adult and youth softball and now soccer tournaments. The indoor facility will ensure Caswell's ability to serve as a year-round facility, doubling its local economic impact in 5 years. In doing so, it will nearly make up for the $5 million economic impact our community lost When the Minnesota Vikings moved to their training camp to Eagan about, after 52 years in the Mankato area. This facility will also provide more opportunities for children in the area, such as community programming, more leagues, and clinics for the multiple sports and activities offered for families of all income groups. The North Mankato and Mankato Regional Center is lacking indoor spaces like this facility and this field house. Will satisfy area business leaders, sports groups, and the general public's needs for quality of life amenities and workforce attraction. Finally, committee members, we currently have $6 million on hand collected through our local option sales tax. We are requesting the additional $6 million previously approved by our citizens due to inflation of building costs and increased interest expenses due to the past year and a half, or throughout that last period, year and a half. The requested local option sales tax extension, I believe, is currently in committee. The City of North Mankato is requesting a $10 million match, as Mr. Brand referred to, from the state per our earlier discussion to see this regional project to the finish line and begin construction late summer, early fall for play in 2024. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing this.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You both kind of breezed by. You had a 76% take people supporting it. Pickleball. If you don't think pickleball, people vote for pickleball. Come be a small mayor and find out how fast that senior group says we want pickleball. So I think you both missed it, but I'm telling you, it's huge. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Closing comments. Representative Brand.
Did you have a comment real quick?
I do. Mayor, quick comment. Mr. Chair, committee members, I agree with you. I am dedicated to my community. I've lived there my entire 51 years of my life. My whole family's been there up to my great-grandfather who settled there. Pickleball is huge, and we have a multitude of pickleball facilities that have just opened in the Mankato area. We do not want to take away from private businesses that are providing those resources to the people of Mankato. So we're providing services and facilities for people that do not have right now, and that includes tennis. So we will be striped for 24, I believe, pickleball courts, though.
Representative Brand, closing.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about Caswell Park Sporting Complex. I think that this is a really good opportunity for us to showcase the partnerships that we have within the greater Mankato and southern Minnesota area. And I would just hope that you would consider this as part of the next opportunity we have to fund such a wonderful opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brand. Next on the agenda, House File 2185. Representative Brand, please proceed.
Yes, House File 2185 is a piece of legislation that deals with the capital investment of several children's museums across this entire state of Minnesota. As you'll see within the legislation itself, there is appropriations for the city of Mankato, where I represent, the city of St. Cloud, a museum, Judy Garland Museum in Grand Rapids, a children's museum, Otter Cove in Fergus Falls, the Wonder Trek Children's Museum in Brainerd Baxter, the Duluth Children's Museum in Duluth, the Works in Bloomington, the Wheel and Cog in Hutchinson, and also rounding it off, the Village Children's Museum in Wilmer, and in Breckenridge, the Children's Discovery Center. I have a couple of additional handouts, I believe, that are included for the Mankato project, and I have with me today Lou Dickmeyer, and she is going to talk to you not just specifically about Mankato, where she is the spearhead of that operation, but also she represents the entire state and the organization that we have helped develop to kind of tackle this issue itself. Bottom line is there are a lot of children's museums that really need some capital investment. These capital investments tell stories of the locations where they live. And then they also provide opportunities for children to learn, to explore, to figure out what career paths they might be going on to, like we have in ours in Mankato. I want to turn my time over to the testifier here. I know she can do a fantastic job, so I won't belabor the point anymore.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the community, for the opportunity to speak to the House File 2185. My name is Louise Dickmeyer. I'm the CEO of the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, located in Mankato. And as Representative Brand noted, I'm representing the members of the Greater Minnesota Children's Museum Coalition. So this bill provides funding for the 10 capital projects that Representative Brand just noted. Together, these coalition museums and discovery centers annually serve over 500,000 guests, and we capture visitors from all Minnesota counties, all over the U.S. and world. We estimate that once these projects are completed, we will at least double the number of people that we serve. These projects include 7 museum expansions, both buildings and grounds, and will fund 3 emerging museums that are already under development. Each of these projects has and will continue to raise private funds that will significantly exceed our request to the state of $31 million in cash. For example, Duluth has already raised $1.5 million, which exceeds their request. Brainerd has a full match for their $4.7 million for their request. And St. Cloud, for example, has raised over $10 million, which exceeds their request. And in our case, we're, our fundraising is just out of the gate, and we're well ahead of 10% of our total goal. As was noted, you have the one-pagers as well as letters of support. Our designs at least give you an example of the experiences that we are hoping to build. Collectively, these projects will affect children and families through renovation of underutilized downtown commercial buildings, new construction of museum buildings, expanding our regional assets, and we are key to attracting employees for our area businesses. We will transform over 30 acres of nature of land for nature-based play, and in some case convert unused city lots. We'll provide families of varying cultures, background, and ethnicities with year-round early learning experiences indoor and out. We'll expand and enhance STEM-focused exhibits and create one-of-a-kind sensory spaces. And by the way, children spend an average of 4 to 7 minutes in unstructured play outdoors each day, and they spend up to 7 hours a day on screens. We intend to remedy that. So why are these projects so critical now? Well, in 2020, our organizations closed down due to the pandemic. Revenue from admissions and memberships, which is the bulk of our revenue, literally stopped overnight. The following 2 years, children's museums worked tirelessly to innovate new ways to serve children and families given those circumstances. During that time, nationwide, 6 children's museums closed permanently, yet all of Minnesota's children's museums survived and planning got underway for new ones. So the 10 museums and discovery centers in our coalition, we did not just wallow in our empty buildings. We learned firsthand what children and families need from our sector during rapidly changing times. We took stock, we took action, and we planned for the future. So there are many worthy projects seeking capital investment in 2023, but please do not underestimate the impact that this group of projects can have. We hung in there when the future was bleak, and we made difficult business decisions in order to survive. We excel in innovating new ways to serve families right when they need us most, not months or years later, and now they want more of only what children's museums can provide. As proof of that, in my museum, total visitors from January 1 through last Sunday was 21% higher than 2019. Our membership is at the highest ever at 2,500 members, with a third of those access members. And on Saturday, we set a record for daily visitors. All of our coalition members are poised to help children and families in a changing world to be economic drivers throughout the state and are worthy recipients of funds to bring these dreams to light. So I thank you for your consideration of House File 2185.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't, perhaps this question would be more appropriate for Representative Lilly, Chair Lilly. In the past, we've had a set amount of money appropriated to the Humanities Center to then distribute to children's museums. Are you going to continue that? That's my question. Would that continue?
Chair Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, we're in the final stages of putting the bill for this session together, and it's certainly likely that there'll be a very bold position for children's museums around Minnesota.
And Representative Erdahl, maybe as a member of the Legacy Committee, I think the request coming before that is mostly more for programming, and so this is for capital infrastructure. Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That answers my question. I was just wondering if requests had been made of Legacy as well.
Close the comments, Representative Brand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would refer you to all of these letters of support from these different organizations. I can tell you that the Mankato Children's Museum has made a really big impact in our area. It started out as a city bus garage where there was literally no education happening. Now when a kid comes to the, like my kids have gone to the Children's Museum, they come away with the museum with an appreciation of the Dakota culture. They come away with appreciation of STEM. They come away with appreciation of ecology and botany, and more importantly, play. And I think that those are wonderful, just wonderful opportunities. I know they do a lot to make sure that veterans and families of veterans are included in the access to programming. People who come from different economic statuses have more access to it as well. And I will tell you that the businesses and the community itself of Mankato are so appreciative of the opportunity. They had previously done kind of a heat map to see where people were coming from. People from the Twin Cities come to Mankato for the Children's Museum. I got to believe that they're also going to all these other children's museums across the state to learn these other important cultural, historical, and opportunities for fun and play as well. So thank you very much for listening to my bill, House Bill 2185. And I would ask for you to please consider this in the next opportunity you have to fund these projects.
Thank you, Representative Brand. Next on the agenda, House File 2448, Representative Dotsiff. Sorry, Representative Nash, you're next. So members, as Representative Dotsiff is coming up, I remind all of you that we only have 5 minutes for your bill. And so if you could keep your remarks short so that we can hear from your local projects, that would be greatly appreciated. Please proceed, Representative Dotsiff.
Thank you, fellow chair. So I don't have 6 minutes is what I'm hearing today. Thank you. I'd like to just, first of all, thank you to listening to my file, House File number 2448, which would provide $17.5 million structural mechanical renovation for all four of WLSD's clarifiers. I'll have to start with, this isn't a want, this is definitely a need that we have for our district. However, they've suffered since then a catastrophic breakdown in the past fall. My testifier will actually speak on some of that as we move forward here. If we can turn it over to the screen. We'll...
Thank you, Representative Dotsiff. Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Marianne Bourne. Thank you, Representative, or Chair Lee and Representatives. We appreciate the time to talk about our project. As Representative Dotsiff had said, this is not a want project. This is a need project. WLSSD serves a 530 square mile area in northeastern Minnesota. Part of our wastewater treatment process are clarifiers, and those are the mechanisms, the large tanks that settle solids. We have four of them, and in October, we had a catastrophic failure in one of the four. As the sanitary district, we've moved forward doing some emergency repairs. But the equipment that we need replaced has a 29-week delivery. So we've got three clarifiers, and that's how we're going to be operating at least until summer. With the failure in our number two clarifier, which was an issue with thinning in the metal of our center pipe, our center well pipe, where the effluent feeds, that collapsed the mechanisms of the clarifiers, which also need concrete repair. And rather than try to describe the enormity of these pieces of equipment, I am going to share a very quick 1 minute video, which hopefully will give you a sense of how big a structure this is. Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully that gave you a scope of how large these clarifiers are. And to just give you a sense, we knew the clarifiers needed rehabilitation, and in the last bonding or the last legislative cycle, we did ask for money to do renovation of two of the clarifiers, and we asked for $6.95 million. And at that time, we knew that we had issue with the concrete and some of the metal within the clarifiers themselves. We did not know about the issue with the center well pipes. And so looking at this and looking at the need to have clarifiers that are operational in order for our treatment plant to do what we are supposed to do and protect the St. Louis River, we need to move forward with these renovations. And at $35 million, which is the entire cost of the project, that represents almost $4 million or almost 4 years worth of capital for WLSSD. Our ask is for half of that, for $17.5 million, so we can move forward with renovating these quickly. We've done some temporary repairs for the three clarifiers that haven't failed, and that will buy us a little bit of time, but those are temporary. And we can't treat wastewater without these pieces of equipment. So we ask for your consideration and fast action, if possible, on this, because we are really operating on borrowed time.
Thank you, Director. One quick question, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Quickly, this project is for renovation, correct?
Yes.
And how long will it last if it's completed?
When the renovation is done, the clarifiers themselves should last another 25 years. That's about the length of time since they were renovated last.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Director. Closing comments, Representative Dotsoff.
Thank you, Chair Lee. As you can see, this is not just a local issue, it's a statewide issue. One thing that my testifier did not mention is the alternative would be the spillover would be in Lake Superior. And I think that could be catastrophic as well as far as how that's going to affect our water and drinking water in the future as well. So I think it's a statewide issue, and I think you see that a lot of us actually, as tourists, will go up in the summertime and enhance and enjoy our community, and I think it benefits everyone. So I would appreciate your consideration for this project, and I can say that this is not a want. This is definitely a need. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dotsoff. Next on the agenda, House File 385, Representative Nash. Welcome, Representative Nash. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 385 is for the third phase of the Lake Waconia Regional Park. In your packet, you have a letter of support from the City of Waconia. And I will let our testifier, Martin Walsh, from Carver County, proceed from here.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Martin Walsh, Carver County Parks and Recreation Director. Thank you for hearing House File 385. Just a little bit of background about Lake Waconia Regional Park. It is located in the fastest growing county within the state. It is also located on the second largest lake in the metropolitan area. It's a part of the regional park system, providing near-to-home outdoor recreation similar like the state park system does. The lake and park are in high demand for recreation, physical, and mental health well-being. Our current usage is just over 200,000 visitors annually and in its current underdeveloped stage. Carver County is seeking matching funds from the state because traditional funding sources are not sufficient to deliver services and infrastructure of statewide and regional significance. The requested Phase 3 development for Lake Waconia Regional Park is shovel-ready and makes use of existing investments in land, utilities, roads, parking, and that were previously funded by the state, Metropolitan Council, and with county funds. It builds upon past investments to construct indoor pavilion classroom space. It will address ADA compliance needs, ensuring that those that are physically challenged and elderly are able to enjoy the great outdoors. It provides physical and mental health benefits by creating access to the outdoors by constructing trails along lakeshore, along wetland, and through forested areas, and provides access to the existing beach and future fishing pier. It improves access to Coney Island, a unit within Lake Waconia Regional Park listed in the National Registry of Historic Places. It fosters social interaction with families, youth, and businesses, and the community in an aesthetic setting conducive to a strong social fabric. It also facilitates events of regional and statewide significance, such as the 2012 Governor's Fishing Opener, area triathlons, walkathons, and 4th of July celebration, and other outdoor events that are associated with watercraft and snowmobiling. We are requesting your support. 52% of our visitors to the Carver County Regional Park System come from outside of our county boundaries. Carver County does not charge an entrance fee into our park, and so the improvements are accessible. Carver County proposes to match $2.25 million of its funds with $2.25 million of state funds for a picnic shelter, additional parking, trails, playground, and other site amenities. With that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for your time and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Director. Closing comments, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. If you've never been to Lake Waconia, I encourage you to come out. I would be happy to meet you there and take you possibly musky fishing, which is one of the greatest attributes of Lake Waconia. This is a very good project. It is one of the fastest growing places in the state. We have a lot of people who come out and enjoy themselves in our parks, and I would appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Representative Olson. First up, House File 1742. Welcome, Representative Olson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1742 is a $10 million ask from the state of Minnesota that will assist in the creation of a $43 million project. So understand that that's 23.25% of the total ask. The rest of it will be funded by a local option sales tax, which is in the tax committee currently, and a lot of outside donations from private entities. With me today, I've got the mayor of the city of Fairmont, Lee Bartz, and the city administrator, Kathy Reynolds, who will continue the testimony.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, and members. My name is Lee Bartz, mayor of city of Fairmont. I want to thank you for hearing this bill. I would also thank Representative Olson for carrying this bill for us. Fairmont is a city of little more than 10,000 residents, located along I-90, south central Minnesota, 10 miles north of the Iowa border. We are an hour from the nearest city of comparable size and serve as a regional destination for people in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa who visit Fairmont for work, shop, dine, seek quality health care, compete in athletics, and spend time on or around one of our five lakes. For years, the people of Fairmont have been asking for a community center and that meets the region's needs, and we have undergone a robust community engagement process to identify what the city entails. In our area of the state, one would have to travel over 40 miles to get to the nearest community center facility. Fairmont has never had a community center, but the need is very much there, and we lack the amenities to support the demands of our city's visitors and residents. A community center would increase our community's capacity to host even more regional recreational events, provide an inclusive gathering space for people of all generations and backgrounds, and its wellness features will lift up our citizens, but especially our aging community through activities, fellowship, and fitness opportunities. Fairmont has so much to offer. We slowly lack a place where people throughout the region can come connect with one another. I'd like to thank the committee for their consideration. City Administrator Kathy Reynolds and I would be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you. So, Mr. Mayor, the language have that you may enter into a lease or management agreement. And so is there an outside partner that may be operating the facility? Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Members, I am Kathy Reynolds, the City Administrator for the City of Fairmont. We are working with an outside organization. We have a foundation that has been established by local residents and set up as a nonprofit, and we will be working with them for looking at the operations and management of the facility. In addition, we are looking to include an ice arena, and our hockey association will be assisting us with managing that facility.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, closing comments, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for considering this this very valuable project to rural Minnesota. It's important to understand that when you have a less population in a different portion of the state, it's very difficult for our cities to be able to fund these. As a small town mayor myself, we constantly had to move things around to make things happen to provide the necessary lifestyle and livelihood for our citizens, which we can't necessarily afford the same as what someone in the metropolitan area could. So I appreciate the conversation and the consideration for this project.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Next on the agenda, House File 618. Representative Olson, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 618 is for a Public Safety and Justice Center for the County of Martin, which is my home. I've got the County Commissioner, Kathy Smith, here. She can, and then we've got the County Coordinator, Scott Higgins, who will continue the conversation if necessary.
Commissioner, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Smith, and like Bjorn said, I am a county commissioner from Martin County, Minnesota. I want to first thank the committee for this opportunity to testify and thank Representative Olson for being the chief author of our bill. In House File 618, Martin County is seeking $19.2 million in state funding to pay just under one half of the more than $40 million in costs for our Martin County Public Safety and Justice Center. These funds will house all law enforcement operations of our co-located county sheriff and the City of Fairmont Police Department, along with 9/11 emergency management, a multi-county drug courtroom, state district court administration, our county attorney's offices, victim witness services, mental health services, and a state-mandated new county jail facility. Without these new jail facilities, the county will be unable to serve female and juvenile offenders fairly and adequately, who are now being sent to other facilities in other counties, sometimes over 3 hours away. We believe this is a very serious gender inequity problem in the criminal justice system for our county and our state. In addition, our Martin County Public Safety Project is shovel-ready and will create over 300 well-paying construction jobs in this rural part of Minnesota. We met yesterday with our architects, World Architects, and our design is complete and finished and ready to go. The county received $2.167 million in state bonding funds in the 2020 legislative session for the planning and design of our Public Safety Center. And we've been working on this plan since then for nearly 3 years, with the understanding that the county would come back to the legislature in 2022 for the rest of the $19.2 million. Since that time, our costs have risen 12% to an estimated $42 million. The $19.2 million of state funds being sought in House File 618 would not be used for law enforcement public safety and court functions of our Public Safety Center and not for jail facilities. The county will be issuing local bonds for local match of funds to finance the cost of the jail facilities. With the county's rural property tax base, the county cannot finance 100% of these new state-mandated public safety facilities on the backs of our local property taxpayers. The county needs this partnership with the state of Minnesota for this $19.2 million to pay part of the cost of this critically needed public safety center. On behalf of the County Board of Commissioners and our Martin County taxpayers, we greatly appreciate the committee's consideration of House File 618 and ask for your support including this in the House Capital Investment Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So you mentioned that this will be multi-county. Can you let us know which other counties will be using this facilities to?
The only part of this that is multi-county is our drug court. They will be using it. We're not building this. We're only building a 50-bed facility, so we're not building this with the intent of other counties participating.
Okay. Close the comments, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one final reminder, this is rural Minnesota we're talking about. They have a lesser tax base. This would, in fact, increase our property taxes by 11% in order to make this fund by ourselves. We are going to be issuing a bonds in order to pay for half of this on our own. But also the things that we're going to be gaining from this project, we're talking about a courtroom that will replace the more than 125-year-old courtroom that we're currently using, which is potentially dangerous for individuals. It's not a safe place. There's no way for us to protect the individuals who are having their court hearings versus there's some, if you went on the tour, as I believe the chair has been on that tour, he's seen the courtroom itself. That needs to be modernized, absolutely. We're also talking about 911 dispatch. We're talking about the Fairmont police system. We're talking about the sheriff's office. We're talking about mental and behavioral health aspects, talking about victim services and court services. These are all areas that we're going to be touching with this state bonding project. We thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Next on the agenda, House File 2934, Chair Hansen. Welcome, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2934 is water and sewer infrastructure for the City of Newport.
Newport is a small town near the Mississippi River, and it is an old town, a very old town, and it's right next to the river. And the geology of that town means that near the river, there's very old pipe, and that old pipe goes underwater. And so I have with me from the city someone here to talk about the problems we have with water, and we're asking for $5.162 million from bond proceeds for that. And Representative Erdahl, that would work out to $1,359 per capita.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name's Joe Hatch. I'm the city administrator for the city of Newport. I do apologize on behalf of our mayor. She was unable to attend today, but wanted to thank you so much for considering this bill. Newport is a small town. Our total city budget for 2023 is about $3.8 million. And doing this infrastructure project obviously would significantly impact our population. Our median household income for Newport is $58,000. We are about 33% BIPOC. We are a poor and diverse community in Washington County. Since 2013, we've been receiving surcharge fees from the Met Council. This is for the infiltration on the rainwater. It's about $2.2 million during this 10-year period. Some rain events, and I apologize for this, it says 600,000 on the handout. Some rain events, we have as much as 6 million gallons of water being treated at the Met Council, and this is through infiltration. This is an environmental problem, and having this treated at the Met Council is not healthy for our state. We have a number of development projects that are going to happen in Newport in conjunction with Woodbury and the city of Maplewood, and improving this infrastructure will help this development take place. Thank you so much for the time.
Close the comments, Chair Anson.
Newport is close. I'd encourage you to come and visit encourage your support for this worthy project. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Chair Lilly. First up, House File 2027. And then, Chair Lilly, I have House File 2027 A1 Amendment. Can you explain the A1 Amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's some clarifying language to that includes the proper wording and the intent to include boardwalk versus another word that I honestly don't understand. And new and maybe staff can explain. And then to the line 1.3 is to take in the scope of the project to change it.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you very much for hearing this bill today. The city of North St. Paul is working on this project. It's a trail it's actually really quite a safety issue. And some of the members have actually been on this. I kidnapped the bus, I think, one year. And so I think they saw it intimately, probably more than they wanted. But it's really quite awkward because there's multiple cities, three cities actually, North St. Paul, Maplewood, and Oakdale are all involved, and two counties, Washington and Ramsey. But I have with me Councilmember Wong and City Manager Frandl, and I'd like to pass it to them, and if they could dig in deeper and do a better job.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Wong. I am a city councilwoman at North St. Paul. Today we're requesting $5 million in state funds to complete that final link to the North St. Paul's Silver Lake Trail. As mentioned before, it benefits North St. Paul, Oakdale, Maplewood, and Century College, and also sits on the border of both Washington and Ramsey County. This proposed trail is connected, is already in plans. So in the Ramsey County Bicycle Pedestrian Plan, the Lake Links Trail Network Plan, and the City of North St. Paul's Master Plan as a Tier 1 connector, and the North St. Paul Living Streets Plan. Again, safety is a major concern on this road, and so we believe this will be enhanced with bicycle and pedestrian safety, promote alternative transportation, access, encourage healthy lifestyle outcomes, and provide recreational links to other existing park systems. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Closing comments, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it actually is quite a dangerous situation there. And, you know, luckily no one's that I'm aware of has been hurt, and maybe there has been some statistics on that. I don't know, but it's a perfect lake for walking, honestly. It's like a two-mile distance, and we really need to have people safe, and we appreciate your hearing today and considering it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Next on the agenda, House File 2266. Chair Lilly.
Again, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an additional project for the city of North St. Paul. North St. Paul is, some of you might not know, it's very similar to Representative Hansen's district or area. It's actually a separate city from the city of St. Paul. It's we're not an extremely wealthy city. You know, we are a suburban city, but we're not. They receive LGA. Years ago, they built a community center, and as we're finding now and on this committee, does happen to have a flat roof, which stands out. We've talked about that as a committee. But they're looking to meet the new modern times and changes that are needed to change this facility to meet the scope of the community and changing needs. And again, I have Councilmember Wong to go into further detail.
Welcome. Mr. Chair. Please identify yourself again and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you again for your time today. My name is Lisa Wong, council member of North St. Paul, and I'm here today with you to share the vision of our multicultural community center. Our 3-square-mile community has dramatically evolved from the 1880s historic North St. Paul to a dynamic multicultural community. The community center was built in 1992 and sits along the Gateway Trail. In the last few years, we have added 300 units of housing and 89 more units to start construction this spring. All of that is within walking distance of our community center. We have been responsive to the housing needs, and the city recognizes we need to be responsive to our residents' social and recreational needs, many who are elders, families of color, veterans, and our youth. Our residents and community partners have expressed their needs, and it is clear we need a safe and healthy space to foster social connection, a place for cultural expression, community education, fitness, and recreation. We envision a safe zone for our youth where they can foster positive social-emotional well-being after school, and the Ramsey County Library has and will continue to be an asset to the center with desires to expand. Our high school has an existing walking path that connects to the community center over Highway 36, and we met with ISD 622 last week, and they're committing to be a partner to serve community education and youth development activities in this community center. We also partner with a nonprofit organization called Why I Am. Their aim is to break the cycle of homelessness and youth incarceration through mentorship, support in courts, life skills, and facilitating meaningful positive conversations with law enforcement. They have been urgently encouraging our council to revitalize the space for our youth, and so that's what brings us here today. So thank you for your consideration, and we hope that our community could be included in your efforts.
So, council member, in the handout, you have an estimated cost of 3.75 to 4.5, and so have there been a decision on what is the amount, and then at the top, you have a request of $4.5 million, and the bill it's $4 million. And so what is the requested amount of the state? Or city manager, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and council members. We're looking at $4 million. We've already made some investments into the building already, replacing boilers, doing some patching on the roof. So but the bond request would actually help finish the rest of the project for both roof, siding, windows, but that's what we're asking for.
Please introduce yourself.
I apologize. I'm Brian Frandl with the City of North St. Paul. I'm the city manager.
So the requested amount is $4 million.
Please.
And then I see on here, renovations will likely include solar energy, electric vehicle charging stations. And so have you made a decision on if that's going to be included or not?
We have looked into that. We have our own electric utility, so we have the resources to do that. We're looking at solar for the roof.
Okay.
Yes.
Close the comments, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing this. North St. Paul's, like a lot of the cities that we've heard through this committee through the spring here, and you know they're trying to do what they can is to meet the new changing community, and it's actually really quite an exciting opportunity for them, and appreciate your support if you're able to fit into your bill, sir. Thank you,
Chair Lilly. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Lee Erdahl. First up will be House File 1460, Representative Erdahl. Please proceed, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to see that once again you've saved the best for last, and away we go. I have two bills up. The first one, which is House File 1460, deals with the renovation of a school in Maynard. Across Greater Minnesota, we have a lot of schools that stand vacant today with mergers and closures and whatever. And some of these buildings are still in pretty good shape and can use a little work to make them useful once again to the community. And such is the case in the city of Maynard, which is part of the McRae School District, Clare City, Raymond, and Maynard. And so in this building, they would like to add or co-locate county family services, other community services, food programs, daycare, library, recreational services. In order to do this, they're requesting $2.5 million. Some of the things that need to be done, the roofs need to be replaced. I think they're flat. Walls, exterior walls, it would benefit from additional insulation. Windows, some exterior windows should be replaced. Doors, some doors will need to be replaced or modified. Tuck pointing, trim repairs, exposed wood will need to be refinished or replaced. Caulking, all the joints, painting. I believe they have a gymnasium there that could still be used by the community. Need some repair of the baskets there because I found that they didn't work when I was there. The ball wouldn't go through. And so they need to repair those. Come on, that was a joke, Pete. All right. Yeah, I did have a testifier from Maynard who is going to explain this in more detail, but due to some technical difficulties, he is not able to be with us today. So I guess that will suffice for this time as to what the project is.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Closing comments.
Just to recognize that you know this is a need that's out there in Greater Minnesota. As these buildings and schools close, there still can be uses made, and I think this would be a viable use of them.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Next on the agenda, House File 2837. Please proceed, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we do have a couple of testifiers on this bill. House File 2837 deals with some safety and basically convenience and effectiveness issues in Meeker County government located in Litchfield. And I have with me the County Administrator, Andrew Letson, and County Commissioner Steve Schmidt. And I don't know which one of you guys want to go first. But
please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Steve Schmidt. I'm Meeker County Board Chair. I'm also the Public Safety Policy Chairman for AMC. I thank you, Representative Erdahl, for bringing House File 2837 to us today. And just a little bit before I get too deep into it, through Public Safety and AMC, we've been talking a lot about Dakota County has a $30 million facility with that addresses the 30-bed, $30 million facility that addresses mental health within the jails. Clay County is another one. Across the state, we are very deficient in that area, so this project that we're about to describe today will help move Meeker into a microcosm of that, addressing some of those mental health issues within our jails. Meeker County has been working to address deficiency in its space at a courthouse and law enforcement center. Major drivers of this project include the security deficiencies in the courthouse and the insufficient working space for Meeker County Sheriff's Office, which also houses the Litchfield Police Department. But of growing concern is our need to address the mental health crisis that is taking place within our jails. The current building does not provide a secure route to transport inmates from the jail to the courts. This requires that they be escorted through public lobby and up the public elevator to the fifth floor, and then through the main entrance into the courtrooms. This poses security concerns for the public and the inmate, as there are increased likelihood of contact between the inmate themselves and the victims and their families. Additionally, the courthouse does not have secure holding cells for inmates awaiting a hearing. To address this, deputies often shackle the inmate to a bench outside the courtroom. In the law enforcement office, there is insufficient space for interview rooms, collaborative meeting space, and private offices. Supervisory staff are required to share an office that was designed for one individual. Additionally, current conference and squad rooms are cramped and do not provide sufficient space when the sheriff's office is tasked with addressing a major crime such as homicide that require extensive investigation and additional personnel. In 2020, the sheriff's office commissioned a report of U.S. Marshal's office to identify security concerns at the courthouse, and these, along with the increased and ever-increasing need to address the mental health crisis within our jails, have led us to ask for funding of House File 2837. And then with that, I'll pass over to Administrator Lutzen.
Please identify yourself and proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andrew Lutzen, Meeker County Administrator. Over the past 7 years, the county has been working to identify solutions to these issues. We've conducted a comprehensive space use analysis and a master planning process and are currently in the design phase of our project. As we've gone through this process, we've done so with the following goals in mind: to enhance the safety and security for staff and the public while improving workspaces, to enhance the customer experience through logical and effective facility solutions, develop a plan that addresses the current and future space needs of the county, and to maximize the use of existing space. Proposed solutions include relocating departments from the courthouse to the county's Family Services Center, which is located about three blocks away, to allow for an expansion of the Law Enforcement Center into the main level of the courthouse. This expansion will allow for the construction of a secure elevator and holding cells for the transport of inmates between the jail and court. Expansion also frees up space in the Law Enforcement Center, which will allow for expanded conference and squad rooms and free up offices for interviews and interview rooms. This will create additional opportunities for collaboration, including the county's public safety community paramedic program, which is focused on addressing mental health crises throughout the community. Finally, a secure checkpoint will be constructed at the main public entrance to the facility, thereby enhancing the overall security of the building by ensuring individuals are screened for weapons prior to meeting with the county attorney's office, Department of Corrections probation officers, jail administration staff, court administration staff, all of whom are at enhanced risk due to their frequent interactions with potentially aggrieved individuals. To accommodate the relocation of the departments from the courthouse, improve customer service experience, and improve workflows for staff and collaboration, the county's Family Services Center will also be renovated as part of this project. The total approved budget is about $12.1 million, which includes renovation of both buildings. Of that, $5.5 million is being allocated to the courthouse and law enforcement center. The county is requesting that the state of Minnesota provide financial assistance in the amount of $4.4 million for that courthouse and law enforcement portion of the project. Based on our current estimates, inflation in the construction industry makes it unlikely this project will be accomplished in the current budget. As such, state assistance will go a long way in ensuring the construction of this project, as envisioned, will be feasible. Thank you, Chair, and your members for your consideration of this project.
Mr. Lutzen, so is a jail a component of this project?
An expansion of the jail facility is. However, it's not an expansion of the beds. What's being expanded is the program space and administrative space to allow for that elevator to be constructed from the jail up to the court level.
Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for one of the gentlemen up there, is the expansion due to the requirements by the DOT or the Department of Corrections as well?
Mr. Lutzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that is being expanded is our programming space, which based on DOC requirements is small right now. We have not gotten a requirement from DOC to provide any sort of an expansion.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, that's something that I put a bug in your ear about a while back as far as all these requirements on all these facilities throughout the state. That's something that we need to, nobody usually wants to work on or fund those things, but it's something that is going to be reoccurring here as we're seeing these bills come forward. So
yeah,
thank you.
I appreciate that, Representative Grasso, and I think that's an issue that, you know, we're trying to grapple with some of these agencies and also the committees with jurisdiction over those operating budgets that may, you know, create a capital need for us. And so not just corrections, but human services and other committees too. And so appreciate you raising that. Seeing no other questions, close the comments, Representative Erdahl.
I'd like to thank the committee and appreciate your due consideration of these bills.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Members, we are done with bills for today. Representative Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 20th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryer moves approval of the minutes for March 20th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, we will have our next hearing on Monday, March 27th. We will continue to have bills heard on informational basis only. The meeting is adjourned.